gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fighting in the War Room, special America's Birthday Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to celebrate America in 2019 than a podcast with two white guys and a Latinx man?
Yeah, talking about a superhero movie that takes place in Europe.
It's the perfect occasion, yes.
But, you know, and I'm surprised this isn't on the IMDb trivia page already. Ends right outside of my therapist's office. Heyo.
The movie ends. You go to the Madison Square Garden.
The movie ends
basketball
proper,
therapy.
Not in the credit scenes where 80% of the meaningful MCU plot is stuff.
We'll get there. If it's not clear, Katie is not here. She actually took a July 4th vacation. The rest of us are around to record a short for Patreon only. So thank you to all of our $1,000 contributor level. You're getting this. If you are hearing this, you're paying us $1,000 a month to get these special podcasts. So congratulations. Thank you. This is just about Spider-Man Far From Home, the 800th Marvel movie to come out this year. We're excited to talk about it though, because, well, I'm excited to talk about it because I think we got some split decisions for the first time since Captain Marvel.
It is legitimately the third Spider-Man movie to come out in the last 7 months, and I do count Endgame because Tom Holland's contract counts Endgame, and so I think that's fair.
And that's how you live and die. I
live and die by
Tom Marvel Holland's Studios contracts. Yeah. Well, let's dive right into Spider-Man Far From Home. Dave, set up Spider-Man Far From Home because it's very much connected to Endgame, which we're not going to spoil at all. Hashtag don't spoil the Endgame. Mm-hmm. But we are going to fully spoil Spider-Man Far From Home. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to keep it that way. So how does Spider-Man Far From Home set up? We're assuming people have seen it, but, you know, let's cover our bases here. What's the deal? What's the thematic underpinnings of this marvelous film?
So Peter Parker's real horny in this second installment of Spider-Man.
You're quoting my review.
This is from the John Watts Spider-Man series point of view. This is the second high school movie where Peter has to balance the problems of being a man of his age in school with being a superhero. But both of those things have sort of been amped up in his romantic personal life. He's going on a field trip to Europe, and as his friend Ned points out, they could be bachelors in Europe, but instead he wants to execute this plan to tell Zendaya's Mary Jane how he really feels about her and maybe get a kiss. When we left off last Spider-Man, he was just sort of getting interested in Mary Jane, so I guess getting blipped away for 5 years really makes you focus in on what's important.
Dave, how did you feel about the introduction and heavy reliance on the term blip, which sort of replaced the snapshot, which is what America had decided was what was going to be the term in the
Who
real world.
Who called it the snapshot?
I think a lot of us, but if the snapping.
No, a lot of us did not.
Snapping was really the word. But
the in-world term that we have been using at Polygon, because it was mentioned in a lead-up comic book to Endgame, was the decimation.
Right. So we have it, the decimation, the snap, and then the blip. Of all those three, I like the blip the most, but I think the blip seems a lot more like what a colloquial world would come up with calling it. Because nobody knew is about this alien being snapping his fingers.
Although it might be kind of fun for a horrific event that took people out of the universe for 5 years. It's a little flippant for the gravity of the event, which depending on how moved you were by the 1-2 punch of Infinity War and Endgame, maybe Spider-Man Far From Home doesn't take the blip seriously enough. I don't know. I thought about that in passing. Not that watching this movie at all The opening of this movie is hilarious.
By the time all is said and done, really the only casualty of the blip was Tony Stark, and the movie certainly spends plenty of time memorializing him. So I'd say that they're treating it with just the proper amount of sobriety.
Fair. All right.
I mean, I like how it's dealt with the structure of this Spider-Man movie, because it has a lot to deal with from Endgame, and then it wants to set up its own thing, which is a couple of things, and then it basically, in its second half, it just rides each reveal. It's not so much like there needs to be I think it's well plotted, but it's plotted a lot more for me because of these little like sections, like an arc of a Spider-Man comic book,
where, or like, a road movie, I mean, or like a kind of vacation. This movie owes a lot to 80s, 90s kind of vacation teen movies, and this is certainly the sketch idea of it.
Euro trip.
I mean, Euro trip is also throwing back to those same kind of movies, but
literally,
it's like a sketch comedy.
I mean, literally, the only difference between this and Euro trip, and otherwise it is a shot-for-shot remake, down to the flurry of old man penises, is that this movie, in breaking from Marvel tradition, actually shot on location rather than just faking it all from the Czech Republic like Eurotrip did. But really the best thing I could say about this movie is it was nice to see Marvel get out of downtown Atlanta for a little while.
Then once he gets on the vacation, he gets drawn into the Mysterio plot with Nick Fury, who basically, the question is, who's going to step up and be the next Iron Man? And for some reason, they put that pressure on Peter Parker, which makes sense. He has the movie after Endgame.
I don't know if that's the in-world logic of why he should.
Basically is the in-world logic. They don't give it too much more thought than that.
I mean, it does make a lot of sense. He is the boy genius. He was the mentee of Tony Stark.
I think the most generous in-world explanation would be that Nick Fury does not have any idea what the fuck he's doing anymore, and is really just grasping at straws because he was out of the loop for a long time, and he's just like, Spider-Man.
I mean, we don't even know if S.H.I.E.L.D. exists. That's the interesting thing about this movie, and we'll get to the very end of the movie when some of this is cleared up, but like, at the beginning and for most of the movie, we don't even know if S.H.I.E.L.D. Who is Nick Fury supposed to be working for? Dave may have an answer, but it doesn't even matter. Like, you just take Nick Fury's word for it. We're going on a mission. They need Spider-Man. And of course, now they also have this guy, Quentin Beck, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who, aka Mysterio, a classic Spider-Man villain, now a hero. Or is he?
Oh, so I guess since we're doing the full spoilers, I could walk us up to the edge of where we're supposed to be, review-wise. So yeah, we team up with Mysterio to fight these elementals, which supposedly destroyed his other Earth, and he got ported over during the snap, the blip, whatever. But really quickly, Quentin Beck's been, you know, knocking out these elementals, and there's basically only one left, and he's going to attack Prague, and so Nick Fury reroutes the trip to there, and it looks like it works out, and Tom Holland decides to give up, Peter Parker decides to give up the Edith glasses, which is something I realized I talked around. Tony Stark leaves the surveillance state's wet dream in a form of AI glasses called Edith, which stands for Even in Death I'm the Hero. But that allows the wearer or the controller of it to control hundreds of space drones.
It also doesn't make sense because you are most likely to be the hero in death. It's not the exception to the rule. Like that is when you associate people with being.
Yeah, that's the part that feels like it doesn't make sense out of the Edith system. You're right. Definitely the acronym.
Listen, it's one of many things that bothered me about the Edith.
So he gives Edith over to Quentin Beck, who seems like a very capable hero, only to learn, dun-dun-dun, Mysterio lies! And he's all been setting it up because Tony Stark wrote off his hologram technology as barf and fired him. And now he's gonna take it to humanity.
More fun with acronyms.
Yes, which I actually like. As far as a Spider-Man movie goes, I like this Spider-Man movie because it doesn't pause long enough on anything to become like too overly serious, and it does have fun with Mysterio, which I, as somebody who read Spider-Man comics, like Mysterio was a lame villain even in Spider-Man comics. So to have like post-reveal fights once Jake Gyllenhaal or Quentin Beck has finally gone off the deep end and decides certain people who know his secret need to die. I like the full-on Mysterio fights that are designed like a little bit more, I guess, like Doctor Strange or like the comic books would have been, where logic kind of goes out the window for a few crazy drone projected
pretty
hologram
Ditko-y.
Things.
Steve Ditko-y.
I do like how the elementals, you know, and we learn, of course, that they are these constructs that these people have just been watching the superhero stuff unfold in their real lives, have created to give the illusion of being comic book villains or these superhero villains. I mean, they do feel like what the most basic, ill-equipped storytellers who've been watching all these Marvel movies play out would come up with, like these boring-ass fucking nature
monsters.
It's
the bad guy from every imitation MCU movie or like 2003 blockbuster that was trying to adapt something that they didn't understand at all.
If the movie were not incredibly boring itself, if I didn't zone out every time one of the elementals showed up and the movie was doing a little bit more to comment on that, could have been useful, but is instead part and parcel of laziness of what turns out to be one of the worst Marvel movies.
This movie is a breezy fun. I thought it was great. I had a really fun time with this movie. And even the stuff that's like mimicking bad CG monsters and silly fights. They're coming to arrest me for my hot take. No, you're on the wrong side of history. Dave and I here, hopefully, are teaming up against you and your smoke and mirrors. I hope maybe it's all a lie. In the post-credits scene, you'll reveal that you're full of shit. But like these CG monsters even are like, I was surprised that they were rendered in a way that was exciting, and they like the CG is really great in this movie. I was shocked when you see these types of monsters, you just expect this 2003 blockbuster with shitty like globule CG. And here, it really felt like, and maybe it has something to do with the on location photography, but it felt like going to a theme park, like the Indiana Jones stunt show or something at Disney World, where I'm feeling the splash or like you feel the fire. I thought that was really pretty well done, and that's only the first third of the movie, because the real fun starts when the smoke and mirrors disappear and Jake Gyllenhaal gets to play a director which I can't wait to learn what director Gyllenhaal was playing
sadly,
in this movie.
And I should tell our listeners this as soon as we can, you are mistaken. The movie really takes a nosedive after the reveal. I think it's fine enough until then, especially when it's character driven, as much as I didn't really like the fight scenes. And I agree that they make use of the real world locations, but the logic that's used to explain how these drones damage those environments, even by Marvel movie standards, even after I have bought hook, line, and sinker into the idea there's this purple space guy who's snapping half of all life away, I could not swallow the idea that these projections were controlled by hundreds of hidden drones that were actually destroyed.
Why?
Not playing by the rules of life. It's trying to be grounded in real life.
Tony Stark had a nanobot Iron Man suit. Like, what is the problem here?
That doesn't bother me because that technology is so far away from what we, at least.
So drones are too real for you.
Yes. I mean, the fact that I know what a drone is, it exists in the world. I understand how they work, unlike nanotechnology, which is real, but I don't understand. I think most people don't really understand. I know what a drone is. I know what a camera is. I know what a projection is. And this, none of that adds up here in a believable way. It took me so far out of the movie, and it was not helped by the fact that Jake Gyllenhaal gets absolutely nothing to do. I mean, the idea of Mysterio is very transparent, kind of like his emotions. And as soon, he has one fun scene in the bar, but once he has gotten through that and his master plan, which is rock dumb, is revealed, every scene that he is in is just him barking the most generic supervillain stuff of like, I'll do it myself, or like, how could you? Or like, it's just so, like, you could feel him getting increasingly bored with that character, which he, I think, has the right read on, but
I'm getting increasingly bored by this
bad take. The material isn't there to give him anything. There's nothing to sustain it.
David, Spider-Man Far From Home? We saw the same movie? Because it's like what you're describing seems like I can't I can't imagine, until you said it, anybody like accusing Jake Gyllenhaal's coming off as bored at any point in this movie. Jake Gyllenhaal looks like he's having a blast.
Yeah.
The entirety of this movie.
Well, maybe well after like, the bar
just,
scene.
Maybe he was just boring me, but I do feel like one way or the other.
Clearly, that's true.
I hate to assume how an actor was thinking while they were on set, but I will say that.
You don't have to.
He brings enough to. Oh. This part where I was deeply disappointed by how little he is able to or is given to do with it. The character does nothing after that reveal. The bar has been set pretty low recently. I think Captain Marvel is still pretty low on the list of Marvel stuff, and that includes what I'm talking about here in the third act stuff. But I did think that this third act of this movie is sort of the epitome of how Marvel third acts fall apart when they just become a lot of smoke and mirrors and nonsense and, the illusions taking center stage and
Dave,
nothing inside of them.
Dave, why is Gyllenhaal awesome in this movie? Which he is.
Because he knows that he's playing a shadow Tony Stark the whole time. So his performance is very self-assured. And then he doesn't need to be anchored to anything real. Unlike your Michael Keaton's, who needs to have like a father angle to it, or needs to have like a blue collar angle to it,
but he also is that. I mean, I like that this movie is thematically connected to Homecoming because both of the villains are these kind of like lower stake. Well, not lower stake, but just like they're more real, right? Michael Keaton was a junk collector who got the right technology and was spiteful and needs to do these heists to make a buck when all these government agencies are stealing his business, right? He's pissed off.
Mysterio,
and Jake Gyllenhaal is the same.
Maybe,
hold on.
Small scale, but he is as unrealistic, as unreal as any villain the Marvel movies have ever had.
But Yeah, this is more of a movie than the kind of realism of Homecoming. But I like that because Mysterio's whole thing is being full of shit. And when you're talking about him kind of like screaming movie jargon, hackneyed lines or something, that's the whole point of the movie. I really don't understand. Like, he is full of shit. He's not Iron Man. He's not a hero, and he's not a real villain either. He's not a
Then why
brainiac.
The fuck are they making
he
a movie about
it? He is an actor. He's an actor, and he just got the right technology to do harm to people.
This is all very.
I
don't think that anything you're saying is incorrect, but at the same time, I don't think the movie does anything with these ideas.
The movie actually does because it builds and builds and builds to this whole idea that he is a bad actor in so many different ways. And his whole idea is that if you point a camera at the right direction and if you're putting on the right performance, you can capture the attention of anyone and be a bullshitter, a bullshit artist. He is the ultimate bullshit artist armed with weapons that can destroy giant cities. And the most interesting part of this movie is when we get to the actual post-credit scene, which does have this huge twist, but plays up those themes because on the bridge in that final confrontation between Mysterio and Spider-Man, he is videotaping things. He's being a bullshit artist till the very last seconds. And then in the post-credit scene, we get this twist where it's like, oh, wait, this whole thing is a political jab. This is Alex Jones. This is coming after Spider-Man.
The closing credits be set together when he's staring into the camera halfway through the movie and screaming, only I get to determine the truth or whatever.
Yeah, this is all bullshit. We live in a bullshit world. Mysterio is a perfect villain for 2019.
Listen, I think 2019 is a bit of a double-edged sword if you want to play with any sort of topical stuff in these big blockbuster movies. It does give reason and a harder edge to some of these ideas you can play with, the doublespeak and so on, but it also is so self-evident, it's so surface level that it just feels like it is exploiting the nightmare that we are living in right now rather than actually doing anything with it. For me, all it was doing was distracting from what these movies should be about, or at least what I was primed for this movie to be about after the first 30 minutes, which is about the fucking characters. I want to see.
This movie's not about the characters?
No,
This movie is not about Peter growing up and feeling anxiety about growing into an adult and taking a job and growing into an adult and having a functional relationship that's not just wanting to kiss a girl under the Eiffel Tower or being a good friend.
No more so than literally any other Spider-Man movie has been. At the point where we're getting three of them in a 7-month span, I need you to do a little bit more than
your
issue one.
Your complaints are beyond the scope.
There are maybe a grand total of 10 minutes of Spider-Man and MJ interacting. And when I compare that to something like the gold standard of Spider-Man movies, which remains and may always be Spider-Man 2, as much as I loved Inside the Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse, rather. That is a movie that actually turns those characters into characters, gives them an
All right,
Dave.
When was
Dave,
the last
Dave.
Time you saw Spider-Man 2? Because Mary Jane of Spider-Man 2 exists to be rescued, yeah. Which this Mary Jane does not exist to do. And the fact that, you know, the 10 minutes that they do get is about them meeting as equals and not about, like, a weird attempted stalking gaslighting is this series' credit to that relationship, because every other Spider-Man series gets really close to Peter Parker, absolute creep. This one, by, like, replacing Uncle Ben with, you know, Tony Stark, and by once again focusing around the core thing that with great power comes great responsibility.
Snooze.
Like, I think really manages lesson. To anchor itself as a Spider-Man movie.
Has it been a minute since I've seen Spider-Man 2? Yes. However, be that as it may, I don't think that maybe course correcting on that one element, if that is indeed what these movies do, and I'll believe you that far, I don't think they found anything interesting to replace it with. I think, you know, I think Zendaya is a really interesting actress. I like her take on this character. But her sniffing out the truth in that one scene, and just sort of that one throwaway line she has that is meant to replace any sort of actual character building about how she is vulnerable and becomes like overly honest as a way of dealing with all of that is not enough for me, especially when I was so disengaged in everything else the movie was doing, and I just wanted more of the characters.
Well, Dave, so I really liked Tom Holland this movie again. I think I like this movie more than Homecoming. At least that's where I'm coming around to that. Just because I like the capital jumping. I like the anxiety that Peter's feeling that feels more palpable. There's just so much on his plate. Maybe I'm just in a very anxious, overloaded moment of my own life, but he was juggling a lot here. And I thought the character stuff really worked. I don't know. What do you make of Tom Holland and Peter Parker and this being a sequel and having been to like space and back, as Nick Fury mentions, like, bitch, we've been to space. Yeah, good point. Like, he's seen a lot of the world. I'm asking Dave a question. Shush. Dave.
I like where this movie ends up with Peter Parker because, I like that they keep his having to resolve a character. They isolate him completely by giving away Edith so he can't call anybody except for Happy. He's got Happy to sort of tell him that, you know, he's got to trust in himself. And through like a little montage of Peter loving science, we see him kind of like earn back his confidence as Spider-Man. And I like that the final battle has Spider-Man operating at peak confidence and, you know, hit the best version of Spider-Man. I'm this one in Homecoming, I'm going to have to like weigh back and forth, because this one I do think is more fun. And it is like a different version of Spider-Man, but it doesn't have the, him trusting his Peter Tingle at the end, although very cool.
I love how that was built into the theme of of the movie.
Well, I mean, that's what we're all supposed to do, is like trust your gut. And if his Peter Tingle had been working, then, or his spider sense had been working, then Mysterio wouldn't have, caused such a big thing anyway, but because he was in such emotional stress. I don't know. This all tracks for me as somebody who knows like these characters. But I do think that Homecoming has him like accepting the mantle of being Spider-Man more than this just has him like, I guess, realizing that he doesn't need to take all this like responsibility on his own. And I hope that, you know, the way he shared with Ned in the first movie and then shared with MJ now, that when we come around, obviously, to what the third movie set up to be, that it's a much more us versus them mentality.
I can hear how wishy-washy you are in trying to figure out what this movie is doing other than being cleaning up the mess that Avengers Endgame left behind and serving as a stopgap between Homecoming and whatever the next movie is. And I think it's so telling that the only things that sort of move this universe along are the scene setting in the beginning of the movie and then the two end credit scenes, which tee up a movie that I actually think would be interesting to see and I look forward to. But
why,
all of the,
what
like,
do you
you
mean?
Were talking about, why I wanted to jump in earlier is you were talking about, you know, it making sense that he's come back from space. You went to space, bitch, or whatever the line is. And then he is in this weird headspace. I found it so hard to understand why now it made sense to slow down and have him essentially regurgitate.
Because there literally hasn't been time.
Shut up! All of this stuff that he went through in the first movie all over again about assuming responsibility and coming into his power when he's already saved the fucking universe.
No, he hasn't. No, he hasn't saved
he
the universe.
Yeah.
He, Tony Stark saved the universe, and he was there. He also has been gone for 5 years.
That doesn't play for me at all. I mean, maybe it's because I am...
Well, that's because you have no attachment to the characters, and you resent the movies for existing.
No, I resent this movie for doing nothing but while just, you know, fucking keeping the wheel spinning until the next movie, which is clearly whatever.
What are you... How is this keeping the wheel spinning? I don't really understand that, because this is about... This is about accepting that your mentor is gone. This is about accepting being an adult and not just like – he has the perfectly reasonable desire to be a kid and shed this responsibility that he has. He just was blipped off the face of the planet for 5 years. He's come back. The whole world has moved on. He has not saved the world. He was along there for the battle, but he's not the crux of that. And now suddenly all the other Avengers are in different places and he's the lone hero on this planet. Meanwhile, he's horny and he just wants to go have fun as a kid. There's a lot of stakes there and the movie worked on me in this way, just like transporting you back into kind of being a high schooler. I think this is the where it doesn't work for you, which is like if you can't get on board with the kind of small
movies,
stakes.
Yeah, with high school genre movies. Of cinema.
No, it doesn't have like a disaffected hipster teen girl at the center of it. So you're not in.
I feel like it's an escalation for the character, but it also scales
Zendaya?
Because it's not
it's
an Avengers
what
movie.
MJ is.
No, she's not the star. That's the problem. You would like it more. Go back watch Euphoria, okay?
Oh my gosh, don't even get me started.
That's your
It is
content.
Really a testament to what is Zendaya's screen presence and what she brings to the table that I am still interested in everything she does, despite this movie and the 3 episodes of Euphoria that have aired thus far.
It's amazing that you could write off this film because of your love for this genre, because as much as the movie blows itself up with big set pieces, it always winds itself back down to the kind of anxiety of like, yes, he has a drone, but he wants to blow up the guy who's chasing his girl. Like,
I wish.
Yeah, there's like 3 awkward
what that
scenes
means.
That take place in hotel lobbies that are just like have no superhero things involved at all. I feel like it's catering enough to that storyline.
I wish I could agree with you. I think my problem is that, at least to my eyes, it is not catering at all to that storyline. It really feels like it is just pausing in the running around that feels so trite and beaten to death already to do lip service to the ideas that are unique to the Spider-Man franchise and these characters and where they are in their lives. But I really felt like they got the balance wrong. This should have been a high school movie about these characters that incidentally deals with all the superhero noise. And for me, especially because of how contrived and bullshit all the superhero stuff was, I felt like it was a bad superhero movie that was making time for these high school tropes. And it's for that reason that I was bored out of my mind. I think it's a balance that Spider-Man Homecoming, had a much better time of dealing with, even if, you know, it wasn't always successful.
Yeah, no. I mean, the superhero stuff in this movie is supposed to feel bombastic. I mean, as the layers peel back, we understand why Peter Parker is both being seduced by Mysterio and his story. Like, from the very beginning, we know Mysterio's a fake. His whole family died because a magma monster destroyed them in the multiverse. Like, it all sounds like bullshit. It's supposed to feel contrived, and it's a testament to John Watts' filmmaking. I think that those set pieces are really slick. I think that the Venice stuff and the lava monster, those really work for me, even though we're supposed to feel like Peter. We're supposed to feel like, wow, we can be a hero as long as we're with Mysterio, or like, wow, someone else could really do this job well. Like, I'm not a hero. And I think you need those big action set pieces between the more psychological teen drama stuff or comedy stuff to warp Peter's entire sense of the world, to make him feel really comfortable. It should feel like bouncing off CG air when he's
wearing
these set pieces. They're supposed to comfort us.
And what you said spoke to my experience watching the movie, where I just never trusted, and I don't know a Mysterio from a hole in the ground because I don't read these fucking comic books, but I didn't trust him for a second. I took him to be the villain.
How could you?
Right, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, how am I supposed to think about this from Peter's perspective, as you just framed it, of this idea of like, well, I guess I don't need to be the hero if Mysterio's in town, when the entire movie, it's so transparent that he's the villain that I'm just sitting there looking at my watch waiting for him to unveil his master plan. And then when he does, it was the most basic shit in the world, and I couldn't.
Because the movie is smart, and that's where this movie is impressive to me, because the action set pieces are actually doing character work.
No.
They're both enjoyable just as set pieces. They could be another set piece in an X-Men movie or something. No, those are all bad. But
it's weird because what you're describing, David, is the mindset of the actual characters, like, in the movie. Like, Peter also wants to have more, like, time with MJ and all the people. He doesn't want to do, like, this superhero shit. He also thinks this is all, like, weirdly
outside. Yes.
He thinks it's weird that Nick Fury is, like, in the sewer with this guy he's never met and is asking him of, like, all people. So I think, like, those frustrations are built into the movie. Your frustration that you're watching something that you know is bullshit is the frustration that Mysterio is causing, and everybody is the frustration of living in the United States at this particular moment.
Oh boy. Okay. That's a big swing.
Big swing.
I'm
with you.
I don't think the movie earns the right to support those kind of swings, and that feels like you pitched.
Well, luckily you're not the only one weighing in.
I can only say how I feel about it. But I do feel like, Dave, what you said was half right. In that I do think that Peter is frustrated by all this and wants to spend more time with MJ. I did not get the sense that, as strange as he may have found it, that Nick Cage was hiding in a cage in the caves under Venice, that he didn't raise as much of an eyebrow about it as I did.
Think about everything that Peter's actually been through. I mean, if you are following the emotional logic of all these stories, Peter's sitting around, another Avenger shows up.
The movie doesn't tell me this, and Marvel movies don't exactly give you that kind of rope to hang yourself. They don't exactly leave the door open to arrive at your own interpretation. This is a movie that is telling you what is on its mind every step of the way, and it did not tell me that Peter was anything but, you know, he had one eye.
So the movie didn't tell you enough? Like, it didn't the nose tell you enough? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the movie was telling me the contrary to what you're telling me it was supposed to be telling me.
Yeah.
Are you playing a Mysterio trick on me right now?
I feel like I'd be gaslit by you.
Also, get ready for this. David's going to have a meltdown. I think the Mysterio CG illusion stuff is, like, right up there with Spider-Verse. I think it's awesome. And, like, I love all the, I'm a giant Mysterio holding a snow globe or whatever of Peter Parker. And, like,
fight is one of my favorite Spider-Man fights of all time.
And it's bubbly and it's super CG, but it's off the rails, and that's what's fun about it. I'm just like, especially
I have been less interested, and I said, and it's disappointing to me because I was surprisingly into Endgame, and I thought that other than the stuff with Ned and his girlfriend, which is like way too broad for I think what this movie should be doing, I did think that the way that it used high school to lay out the aftermath of the blip was fun. I think a lot of that stuff, like the opening in Homecoming, the opening here is really clever.
The first 5 minutes.
I thought the first 5 minutes were very funny. I just, you know, once this becomes a very generic Spider-Man movie that is not doing nearly as much as you, for me anyway, it was not doing nearly as much to undermine and subvert these tropes as you are telling me that it is, I really couldn't have cared less. And I definitely think it suffers after the reveal. And then furthers this universe and any of its characters at the very, very end of the movie during the final credits.
It's so interesting that you think that it suffers after the reveal. First off, the reveal rules, like doing the Iron Man 1 throwback with Peter Billingsley inspired gesture. I really loved that. And even the barf thing, I mean, my theater cackled out loud when it kind of like zoomed past Tony Stark in that Civil War scene and Jake Gyllenhaal has a horror face. It's very intentionally funny and it really hit.
There's a morph element to that scene. It's very morphy. It's very Velvet Buzzsaw. That was the vibe I got.
Well, he's working on that wavelength again. And I like the scene where he's directing, like, we need a little more of this and we need a little more of that. And this is what gets the audiences hyped when they see the heroes in action. Like, how you know that this whole movie is supposed to be.
Do you know when my audience lost their mind? The one and only time, because I saw this with an audience of fans, not critics, Patches. And they were not into it at all. It was a very, very, I mean, they were hyped when the movie started and they were yelling. And then as the movie went on, you could feel the air getting sucked out. You really could. I mean, it was like I was expecting these big reactions.
I think it was just your brain.
I promise you it was not. I have been in Marvel movies where people, I've been to that Marvel marathon where every time, even after 30 hours, Stan Lee showed up and the whole room lost their mind. And I'm happy to report that back to you. But I'm telling you, this experience, the movie was dying in the room. And then the closing credits happened. And the reveal of the world finding out about Spider-Man, mild murmurs. The appearance of, what's his face? J.J.
Talos? Oh, J.J.
What's his face?
J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes, but what's the actual actor's name?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. They lost their fucking minds.
Of course.
It was bedlam. It was utterly insane.
Of course.
That was the one point in the movie where there was a pulse in that room.
I mean, that was not my experience at all. And also thank God, because I had a great audience, and they ate up every bit of it. And not
what was your audience's favorite
Marvel
part?
Shills.
So mine was also a fan screening, and the biggest, they were pretty much into it, but the biggest reaction that they laughed at, like, even beyond, like, over the next dialogue, was Peter being caught pantsless with the attractive like blonde lady.
Was I the only one who thought it could have been Pepper Potts from a distance when you first saw
Wow,
back
no, not at, not even close. What?
I was like, oh, Pepper is there to, like, guide him, give him advice, and then...
it was like a 20-year-old Danish model or something.
You see her in the background of a long shot at the beginning.
That's hilarious. I mean, that's straight, like, 90s comedy moment there. That was funny. I loved... What was the nickname that his... The shadow suit, the stealth
Night
suit.
Monkey.
Night Monkey. Every Night Monkey joke
Night
killed.
Monkey is good. Night Monkey is funny. I'm here for
And that. That beautiful Netherlands flower garden.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. Or just the Netherlands, you know, the nice Netherlands people who land you.
It really is a pleasure to see one of these movies shot in real places. You're right, David. This, like,
thank you.
It's very distinct. I need to say that once on this podcast. And hey, Happy Hogan, he's in this movie. Everyone loves Jon Favreau. Give him a hug.
It would be great if they would ever let Marissa Tomei do something in these movies other than be a lust object for various men. In the first movie, every time a new male character is introduced, they are introduced by getting on Aunt May, and here again, she serves the same purpose.
But she's always better than that, you know. She herself rises above. Marissa Tomei is amazing. She needs to be more in these movies. Well, I guess that's it. Should we talk about the post-credit scenes? I mean,
we could talk about what I think it is.
Okay,
want to talk about what I think it is? All right.
Well,
Yes. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has a power creep problem in that now, post Endgame, the entire world is aware that there's, like, this cosmic level of people who could fuck with your shit. So in order to, like, scale back down to have your Spider-Mans and your Shang-Chi's and not have it be completely dumb, send your powerful people into space. I think there's a lot of problems to be solved out in space, especially if, you know, Aunt May's in a charity for people displaced in New York from the blip. Like, that happened to the entire universe, and there were not, you know, Avengers to save every planet. So I like the idea that S.H.I.E.L.D. has become the Joss Whedon-invented, from 2004 comic book X-Men thing. There's a space version of S.H.I.E.L.D. called S.W.O.R.D. That is run off a giant space base called the Peak. So I'm wondering if Nick Fury
is... Is this real, or are you just making this up in real time?
No, this is real. You could Wikipedia it. That's how real it is. But you could, I'm wondering if, Nick Fury was on the Peak and we're going to see, your Thors and your Captain Marvels and your Doctor Strange, basically the huge, powerful people, be off Earth for a while.
And then you have the Eternals movie that Chloe Zhao is directing, right? That's all space set drama.
Right. And then that also has to do with, like, the Skrull and the Kree. So the idea that the big, it could, the comics, they get there. I don't know if they're going to actually do that, but it seems like, you know, with having the Skrulls in this and having the name drop of Kree sleeper cells, that could come into play. But yeah, I think the post-credits scene is to be like, now these people are in space.
I dig that. And I also like that we have a Sixth Sense moment. I want to go back and rewatch this movie and hear all the like Nick Fury Talos.
I mean, it's jargon. It was clear enough that even I, in my bored stupor, picked up on it as it was going along, where they mention Captain Marvel and Nick Fury goes like, "Don't even mention her name to me," and stuff like
I
that.
Where cannot I imagine like, you. No, picking up on that and being like, it must be Talos during the movie. I didn't see it coming at all.
It's so clumsily done, and the dialogue makes so little sense in that moment. I was thinking,
you're an MCU sleuth.
I had nothing else to pay attention to because there's nothing happening in the movie. No, I'm serious. They mentioned this, and I'm trying to remember back to Captain Marvel, the most forgettable movie I've seen in a very long time, and I'm trying to think of
okay, so Captain Marvel, you hated it, but Talos was right on the front of your mind.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Although Talos, obviously the best part of Captain Marvel.
A good friend.
Talos, a great friend. But I was trying to remember, what the status of the relationship was between Captain Marvel and Nick Fury where we last left off. Cause I was like, wait, did they end on bad terms? Was there a fight that I don't remember? Cause there are so many things from that movie I don't remember. And then I was like, no, I think they're friendly. That is very odd. And so while I didn't jump to the conclusion like, oh, he's a Kree, of course, because, my brain doesn't work like that. I was not, what's a Kree then?
Kree That's is, like, Annette Bening and, Jude Law. Yeah.
Whatever.
Sometimes they're blue, sometimes they're not.
Someone who definitely detected Talos.
I was not surprised by the, reveal when it came out.
Okay. Well, I was, and it was awesome. And the J. Jonah Jameson moment is amazing because after, poking holes, the multiverse does not exist for all intents and purposes because Mysterio is full of shit. The multiverse actually could exist because J. Jonah Jameson exists in all Spider-Verses.
All Spider-Verses.
I love that. I love that.
Here's something we did on Storm Spoilers that I would like to get you guys your thoughts
Please. On.
The third Spider-Man movie. His identity's out there. What's the subtitle? assuming it sticks with the home, theme.
Oh. I'm gonna have to, I didn't prepare this answer. Yeah, home away from home?
Home Alone.
we came up with Home Alone, and the one that I think we thought was, like, maybe even usable is, like, House Arrest, right? Cause then he just stops being Spider-Man or something.
Oh, wow. But
don't they need the...
Don't you need home in it?
Home in there?
Maybe.
Home arrest?
Home arrest?
Home. Well, there's got to be an easy
You
way
can't,
to
can't go home again? That's just, like, depressing and weird.
Well, let's see. Let's type into IMDb the word home.
Home is where the heart is?
So we got home improvement.
Homesick?
Home improvement.
Homesick is good. I think that's plausible.
He might have to go on the run. He'll be very lonely.
Homeland, Spider-Man Homeland. That checks out for me. Home and Away. Daddy's Home.
Spider-Man.
Daddy's Home
3, Daddy's
Spider-Man.
Home.
Hey, I think that's a Sony movie. Oh, no, it's a Paramount movie. A Home Truth? What about that? A Home Truth?
No,
I am
going to go with Homeland.
Really, that's a Showtime series. I don't think that's going to fly.
Well, Homecoming is a Beyonce movie.
I'm going to go with Homesick. That's not taken by anything.
I don't think they're going to do that. I would put my money on Homeland.
Wanted.
Maybe they'll go the Kanye West route and go with Spider-Man Graduation.
Ooh.
I think people were predicting that for this, but I don't know. I'm excited.
Yeah,
I hope John Watts comes back. I really...
Yeah, let him do a trilogy.
To cap it, like, yeah, first off, I think he'd be the first MCU director to do a trilogy. Is that? I guess the Russos kind of did a trilogy. They didn't do three Captain America movies.
Right.
I don't think it counts.
And
John Watts
is on his way.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess he'll beat him. But yeah, John, I think he gets the Marvel Universe, and David's going to completely disagree with this, but I don't care. I think he gets the Marvel, like, the algorithm. I think he understands. I'll use all the math terms. The calculus, the algorithms.
I don't disagree at all. I think
he understands how to put these action scenes together in a way that says something. That's what you disagree with.
Yes. You had me for a second.
He's able to imbue something really silly and very, like, movie fun. I don't think that Far From Home loses its kind of like sugary, breezy quality, this kind of pure summer blockbuster, even when it dips a toe into something really political, probably the most political thing that any Marvel movie has ever said about the world.
Maybe any movie has ever said about the world.
Yeah, it's the greatest political film of our time, I would venture to say. Yeah. I just think John Watts is working on a slightly different level than everyone else who plays in the sandbox, and yeah. I'm excited for more.
Yeah, no, he's basically our Sergei Eisenstein of the blockbuster universe, and it's great to see him working with so much money.
I can't wait for Tom Hardy to.
You really think Venom is gonna come into this? No way.
No, but I do think it's funny that like when they, you know, whenever Sony gets a character, they're like, well, we got Tony Stark again. Let's really focus on the fact that he's like this industrialist that just builds weapons and points them at Earth all the time. And now he's dead.
Yeah, how much shit did Tony Stark build has almost destroyed humanity at this point? Like, the fucking Edith glasses. I was like, again? With this? Ugh.
I mean, but, like, would you rather them just completely make a hero out of the guy that builds weapons to basically kill anything that causes him harm?
Dave, I spent 22 fucking movies going through that whole arc. I'm good on Tony Stark. I don't need.
Well, this is the end of the Infinity Saga, according to Marvel.
Yeah.
Dave, that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you think that this movie is the, because this is how it's being promoted, but I don't, you know, as we discuss on this podcast all the time, just because the artists of the marketing team at Marvel Studios says something doesn't mean.
They are the real artists.
Yeah, they're the real artists. Doesn't mean that the audience has to believe that. We believe what we want. Spider-Man Far From Home the end of Phase 3 or the beginning of Phase 4? Or does it exist in a limbo that only we will understand?
It exists in a limbo, and it was only marketed as the end of Phase 3 so people wouldn't be expecting like road markers to Phase 4 or like any more than they already were. Yeah. Well, I mean, they may exist. We don't really know. The reality is this is a Sony movie at the end of the day, and how much are they going to really let a Sony movie dictate where they go? Like, they have a hint, but like, you don't see a sword logo. You know,
that's why Nick Fury's like, don't even talk about Captain Marvel in your fucking Sony Pictures bullshit.
Yeah, don't invoke that fucking name. Anyway, but yeah, I will say that of the 2019 Marvel movies, this is the best, followed by Captain Marvel, and then Endgame, had to exist.
Wow.
Wow.
Make me make that ranking. I think this might be ahead of Endgame for me, just in terms of pure fun, but Endgame is still good. You're wrong about that, Dave.
I don't think that Endgame's bad, but it's just I had the least amount of fun with it this year of the three Marvel releases. I think so. I mean, it's not that it's like a bad ending to a story, and like, you know, we go back and listen to my review. I'm sure I said something like this. Like, it's a great conclusion to a 22 film arc of the three Marvel movies I got this year. I had like, it was a drag. I spent 9 hours with that movie. I think I get to say that
back in theaters with more footage. So we're not going to be reviewing that.
More Hulk footage. That's what we were missing.
We wanted it.
This Captain Marvel approval is hard for me to take. I really thought that was bottom of the barrel for Marvel.
And then you saw this movie.
No, this is a better. I got a lot more enjoyment out of this than I did out of Captain Marvel. The first 5 minutes alone, I do think that the stewardship, as you were talking about, to credit to John Watts, just like understanding the piece, this is a piece in a greater puzzle, and having fun with that. Is something that a privilege that I don't think was extended to Captain Marvel because of all of the what that it had to carry, and the fact that I like this iteration of Spider-Man, even if I haven't loved either of the movies that he's been in, whereas Captain Marvel is a complete black hole of interest for me so far.
Captain Marvel needed more basketball players blipping back into marching band practice.
Yes, it did.
Running into tuba players.
On that,
ecstasy for me. That was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. We all agreed. Anyway, we got
that was our Far From Home.
Yeah,
review.
We're done with Marvel for the year. This is pretty
for like
early
a whole
for us.
Year, actually. Yeah. Right. Like we don't
as far as
technically we know, but it's probably going to be a May 2020 release, Black Widow.
As far as I know, Black Widow is still very much in production.
Now the police are coming for you.
Yeah.
David. That movie is not coming
out. To lock you away until the next Marvel movie.
Before February of next year, so at the very earliest.
Yeah, I am.
But I do
read up on Taskmaster.
I do think Kevin Feige is probably going to do another one of those. What are they called? Keynote
symposiums.
Speeches. Yeah, it's PowerPoint presentations in August.
Well, they're coming to Comic-Con this year, so tune into Polygon.com for all your Comic-Con news. You should
actually
let me plug that.
I would suggest not tuning into any Comic-Con news.
Thank you. Wow.
Just any comic. I think
fun is overrated on this episode of Fighting in the War.
Polygon.
On to the dirgical films of the fall.
Exactly. I'm sure Polygon's coverage of Comic Con will be wonderful, but it's the middle of July.
It will be.
Go to a lake or something. Relax.
All right. We're going to wrap this up. David, where can people find more of your work online?
I think after this episode, no one's going to want to find me anywhere. Let's just all go read Polygon. Polygon.com.
Yay!
I'll go back to promoting my own shit next week. Polygon. Right, come and review us. Review us all together on iTunes, please. We usually read your reviews at the start of the episodes, the full episodes that we do. So starting again next week.
This was
a
short episode, clocking in at 50 minutes.
but we did, we fit a full episode's worth of fighting into this war room. So it was worth the $0/1,000 Patreon dollars that you may have paid for this episode.
And Patches, where can people find more of you?
Polygon, of course. Plus Twitter at Mr. Patches.
And you can find more of my work. I'm going to be explaining the post-credit scene of this movie at Thrillist.com. And my other podcast, The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast, is taken 2 episodes this week. Another episode of Lost and then 1 Spider-Man Far From Home episode. So you could hear our other home subtitles for Spider-Man 3 on that. And then you can find all of us on Twitter at FITWR, where you could tweet about whether or not you did or did not like Spider-Man, or if you're one of our stateside friends, what are you eating this 4th of July? I would like to see pictures of food. Just tweet it at that FITWR.
I'll retweet everyone.
I don't want to see pictures of food.
You don't want to see pictures of food? Why not? Big hot dogs and sauerkraut and.
Just makes me have gas.
You love the red, white, and blue. This is your favorite holiday of the year. You love America.
God bless America.
David Ehrlich, as close to home as possible, would be the name of the movie.
David's just gonna
David Ehrlich on his couch watching Mad Men. It's just 3 whole movies of me on the couch watching Mad Men and laughing at
2 Lane episodes
Price
of Mad Men, 1 episode of Stranger Things, 2 episodes of Mad Men.
David, we need you.
Okay,
Elementals.
As much as I want to end this episode, I really have to clarify before we stop recording that there is no fucking Stranger Things in my Marvel movie. Thank you very much. It is pure Mad Men. And then maybe there's a gripping scene where I look at my Twitter feed and see people talking about Stranger Things, and then my eyes roll out of my head, which it turns out is my superpower.
I bet we're talking about Stranger Things next week.
Oh, boy.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Yeah.